Good. Thanks. So, and thanks for staying to the last session. As you can see, the title is Efficient Divide and Conquer Simulations of Symmetric FSAs. So, let's see if this is going to work. Okay. So the divide and conquer paradigm is something that probably all of you have seen at some point because it comes up in classical algorithms and it also comes up in parallel computing. And one of the main things that this talk is going to concern itself with is a divide and conquer process, except you want to model it after a finite state automaton. So the main result is given a symmetric FSA, so this is a finite state automaton that reads in a string. Even if you permute the input, you're going to get the same result. We show that you can simulate the symmetric FSA with a divide and conquer automaton. And also, it's not really any more complicated in terms of the amount of state space that you require. So, try that again. Okay, and the content of the talk, I'm going to give it just a little example of divide and conquer. And I'm going to talk about a result from 1977 by Ladner and Fisher, which actually does give you a divide and conquer simulation of an FSA, regardless of whether it's symmetric or not. I'm going to talk a bit about an old model and motivate this new result, give a proof and a statement of the main lemma of this new result, a sketch of how you prove it, and then I'll talk a little bit more about remarks at the end. So just to make sure that everybody's on board with the same definition, for me an FSA has input alphabet, an output alphabet, a state space, and an initial state. And it has a transition function that I'll just write like this for every input symbol. We also have a post-processing function, and this generalizes the set of accepting states that we might have. And you start in state Q0, you apply the transition function for each of the input symbols, and then for the last state you apply pi and it gives you an output. So if you just had an accepting state, you would imagine that the output function pi maps the accepting state to accept and everything else to reject. And symmetric, as I said, is just insensitive to permutations of the input. So one thing you might want to do, let's say you have a bunch of jelly beans. You're running some sort of contest, and somebody guesses the jelly beans. Now you actually have to figure out how many jelly beans you have. And it could take a long time to count them. And I realize it looks more like pepperoni than jelly beans. But you might call up two friends, divide the jelly bean piles in two, ask them to count their piles, and then you're just going to add the results. And in turn, they can ask their friends to count, and eventually they're going to get these numbers back. They just add the results, and you have your final answer. So it's a prototypical example. The essential elements of it that's going to define a divide and conquer automaton, and I'm not going to put up all the notation, but there's a preprint if you want to see how it's written formally. We have the inputs, and you're allowed to partition them arbitrarily into two parts. You recursively partition until you hit a trivial case where there's just one input. And you combine the intermediate results going back up the recursion tree using a deterministic two-input function. So that was just plus with the jelly beans. And again, we have a post-processing function that maps the final intermediate result to some sort of output. And the definition of a divide and conquer automaton is basically this sort of a process, and the output needs to be independent of how the division was performed. So if that's satisfied, we call it a divide and conquer automaton. So this is the idea I mentioned from 1977 by Ladner and Fisher, and it's pretty neat. It was used first for parallel processing, and it lets you simulate any finite state automaton with a basically a finite state divide-and-conquer process. So, using the definitions that I've given before, you can write pretty explicitly what is the output of a finite state automaton on a given input. Well, you start in the initial state, and you apply each of these functions, and then finally you apply your post-processing function. So you can also write this using functional composition. Hopefully, you've all seen this notation, but it just means F alpha, and then you do F beta, and then you do F gamma, which is exactly the same as what I wrote above. Now, the neat thing is that you can view these functions actually as the objects that you care about. And the composition operator is associative. So you can actually use divide and conquer to compute the composition of the different f functions. So that's the main idea that was, at least for the stuff that I'm using, the main trick that was in their paper. And then in post-processing, you have this big composed function. You plug in the input Q0, and you apply the post-processing function. That gives you the output of the FSA. Now, there's one issue here, is that the number of intermediate states, in other words, the number of possible values that each intermediate result can have, it grows exponentially. In other words, go back. So if your original state space had q elements, then these functions that you compute, well, there's q to the q possible different functions that you could have. So it does require more storage. And I have an illustration here of this process. You have an input string, and I'm defining a shorthand notation. F sub F is just the result of applying the transition functions for all of these characters one at a time. So what's the Ladner and Fisher process is going to do is you take the string, you break it arbitrarily into two parts, and again, just like the jelly bean thing, you recurse. But here, you notice that the order is important, and this is encapsulated in the formal definition of DCA. So in the base case, we just have one symbol, and we're going to look up the value of the transition function for that symbol, and we store it as a table. So these tables are the q to the q different intermediate states that you can have. And the recursion comes back up. And eventually, we're going to get a recursive call that returns the value of the transition function for all of the characters in the first half of the string. Then we get the transition function for all of the characters in the second half of the string. And now, it's easy to see what happens if you compose this function and this function together. Well, it's the transition function for reading all of these characters and then all of these characters. And given the two tables, you just look up the different values to compute the composition of these two functions. So these little boxes here represent something that should look like this. It just is an explicit map of the values of some function from Q to itself. So that was their idea, and it popped up a lot of times after that, but this is the first instance of it I could find. So I want to motivate the specific result that I'm going to be talking about. It comes from a previous paper called Symmetric Network Computation with Santos and Paula. And what we wanted a finite state automaton-based model of computation in an arbitrary network. And in fact, the sensor networks that I think yesterday there was a talk about, and this is sort of where we originally started looking at things. And we wanted some sort of finite-based model because these sensor network motes are very simple. You'd think that finite state automata would make a good model. But we also, more specifically, we wanted global symmetry and local symmetry. And the reason for this was that that seemed to be a common theme to robust network algorithms. And this is not something you can prove. It was just an empirical observation. But if you want to compare an algorithm that builds a tree structure for communication is very vulnerable, because if one of the tree edges dies, the tree no longer exists and you can't use it. So that's kind of why we came up with this model. And we played around with it a little bit. The final choice was to make every node a copy of the same symmetric FSA. And the way that the network runs, that each node is going to read all of its neighbor's states as the inputs when it computes its own next state during a transition. And the model, you can make it asynchronous or synchronous. You can extend it to be probabilistic. And even though it's a very simple model and there's a lot of symmetry, it's not much of a restriction because you can do leader election. You can find the so-called bridges of a network. Firing squad is one of the things we weren't able to figure out. So there are some things unknown, but then again, the model is only about a year old. And I have a demo of it, just to give you a concrete picture of what I'm talking about. So this is going to run an election algorithm on something that looks like a square grid, except I've added some random edges here, just to emphasize the point that the graph doesn't need to be regular. So there's a couple of nodes that are contending to both be the leader of the network, and eventually one of them is going to get eliminated. Once that happens, it does sort of normal standard tricks to try to verify that it can be the leader. But I'll go back to the presentation now. So that's the model we have in mind. Now, specifically for this new result that I'm talking about right now, just consider one of the nodes. I said it's an FSA, and it should be symmetric, and it can have arbitrary degree. So how should you model that node? Well, you can model it as a symmetric function that's computable by an FSA. But it turns out there's two other models that are equally good. You can model it as a symmetric function computable by a divide-and-conquer automaton, or you can model it as an ultimately periodic symmetric function. So a couple of examples of an ultimately periodic symmetric function would be determine if some node has at least 10 neighbors. That's one thing you could do, because it doesn't matter what order you read the neighbors in. It's easy to come up with an FSA for that. Or if the number of purple neighbors that you have is odd. So anyway, you get this sort of formulaic approach. But actually, Ladner and Fisher, and we didn't know about this at the time, they already showed most of this equivalence, and they showed a stronger result, because their work implies that the FSAs and the DCAs are both equally powerful. It's not explicitly detailed here, but it's easy to simulate a sequential automaton with a divide and conquer. It's easy to simulate divide and conquer with sequential, because a normal FSA is just conquering its input one symbol at a time. So, and then, as I said before, that had an exponential increase in the state space size, so we'd like to do a little bit better. And the new contribution is just doing the same sort of conversion without any increase of the state space size, but it only works for symmetric FSAs. Okay. So I'm going to go through the proof of the main lemma. And once you have that, the rest is not too hard to figure out, but I'm only going to sketch it. So we need a couple of definitions. First of all, we're going to call a state of an FSA inaccessible if there's no input string that leads to that state. Secondly, we're going to call two states indistinguishable if there's no string that you can tell them apart when the automaton actually gives its output. So again, what this notation means is there's no string F, no sequence of characters, so that when you apply all these transition functions and then look at the output, there's no way that you can tell Q and Q prime apart. And if an FSA has no inaccessible states and no indistinguishable pairs of states, we're going to call it irredundant. And this is something that might come up as a exercise in an undergrad computability course, is that it's not too hard to remove the irredundant states and the indistinguishable pairs. So for example, if you look at the transition graph and you delete all the states that are not reachable from the initial state, then that gets rid of inaccessible states. Getting rid of indistinguishable pairs is similar. So given an arbitrary FSA, we make it irredundant. And what is that good for? We're going to show that an irredundant symmetric FSA has a commuting transition function. Well, all of its transition functions commute with each other. And a remark about this is that the symmetry that we defined is that there's this correspondence between inputs that are permutations and the outputs have to be the same. And we're not putting any restrictions at all about how this symmetry is obtained. In fact, the inner workings of the automaton could be very asymmetric. But if we also specify that the FSA has to be irredundancy, and that is putting a constraint on what happens internally, then we get another I'll call it a white box result because it's the opposite of a black box where you don't know what's going on. Under these conditions, the transition functions have to commute. And once we get this, we get a pretty simple divide and conquer construction to simulate any symmetric FSA and a reasonably short proof of correctness. So again, there's the statement of the main lemma, that in a symmetric, irredundant FSA, the transition functions commute. And so the first step is, well, for the sake of contradiction, suppose that they don't commute, and that's exactly equivalent to saying that there's two input symbols and some internal state Q, so that applying F sigma then F sigma prime gives you a different result than F sigma prime F sigma. And because F doesn't have any indistinguishable pairs, there is some continuation, basically, from this state and from this state, which we'll call S, so that if you take these two states, you run S on it, and then you look at the final output, you get different answers. And then similarly, since the FSA is accessible, there's some string T so that when you read it initially, starting from the, basically the, when the FSA wakes up and it's in the initial state, there's some T that will bring us to Q. So put everything together, you have this enormous equation, but it's just saying that you read T, you read sigma prime, you read sigma, you read S, you get a different result than T sigma, sigma prime S. But notice that these two strings are actually permutations of one another. So in a symmetric FSA, and by hypothesis the FSA is symmetric, this is impossible. So once you get that, the actual algorithm for conversion, you look at the state table, the transition function basically, and then you make it reducible, which is a standard exercise, and it takes polynomial time and the number of states. And then finally, what you have is already guaranteed to be commutative in terms of its transition functions. Okay, so that's the first half of the construction. The second half, now for each state Q, we just pick some representative string that reaches that state from the initial. And now what that means is basically that R of Q and S are interchangeable at the start of the input because they both have the same effect. And since the S commute, we can move it around and they're interchangeable anywhere. So now the construction, just you have a base case, which is very obvious. And for the combining, when you have to combine Q with Q prime, you take any representative for Q prime and treat it as if that string were acting on Q. So it's hard to see because everything's been distributed over a bunch of slides, but that's the whole construction, and it does work because of the interchangeability that I talked about. So there's two main things that I'm looking at now with regard to this. One of them is that you can extend the Ladner and Fisher result for stochastic or non-deterministic automata, but it seems for sure that our approach won't work. But we don't have any counterexamples yet. More interesting problem, I think, is that if you're given an FSA with an implicit transition function, for example, the inputs and the internal states are binary strings, and your transitions are computed by some sort of computer or Turing machine, we actually need to write down the whole table to make it irredundant in the first place, and that takes exponential time. So we'd like to be able to do better than that. And that's the end of my talk, so thank you for listening.